Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
We're back on the road this April with our live show, Cocaine Cowboys. If you want to hear the story of Ireland's love affair with Colombian powder and those who made millions in the gold rush, join us in Galway's Town Hall Theatre on Saturday, 6th of April, Killarney's INEC on Saturday, the 13th of April.
Tickets for Belfast's show have sold out on Ticketmaster.ie, but limited availability remains at ulsterhall.co.uk. That's ulsterhall.co.uk.
Mago Gately was saying, look, there was credible threats to his life, and he hasn't been able to work since 2015 and hasn't been in receipt of any social welfare, and so was entirely dependent on his partner Charlene Lamb and family members to tide him over. In the case of the Quantity Surveyor, he came back with almost the exact same figure as the cab's Quantity Surveyor on how much was spent in the house. So all the wrangling in the end, and it didn't amount to much. In fact, if anything, it strengthened the cab's case.
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs, and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe.
Which organisation loyalist James Mago Gately has been linked to the gangland assassinations of David Byrne and Eamon the Don Dunn for the first time in a courtroom? Gately, who survived a number of shooting attempts himself, was formerly a member of the Kinahan organisation, but remained loyal to the Hutch side after his friend Gary Hutch was murdered, the court heard. Today, I'm talking with journalist Eamon Dillon about the extraordinary information about Gately's links to organised crime, heard during a Criminal Assets Bureau Proceeds of Crime case against him. This is Crime World, a podcast from Sunday World. So James Mago Gately once sold sweets in a shop, he says, and earned his money through other means, including his partner's beauty company. And he did certainly own a little newsagent or something around the back of this building.
It wasn't
the
too
Northern
far
City.
Away. Yeah, yeah, just on the corner there.
Yeah.
Wasn't that far away at all. And he was a barber as well.
Toilet rolls, I remember, in it actually, because they were always packed up outside the front of it, yeah.
Don't recall that now exactly. But it was on my way home, all right.
Yeah. So all of that, but in what is pretty sensational evidence read to the court as part of the Criminal Assets Bureau grounding affidavit for their case against him, it has been said, and like, this is no surprise to you or I, but, you know, we've always known the sort of some of the details that have come up, but we were in no way able to speak about them because they hadn't been put before the courts.
Yeah, I suppose this is what comes out in a lot of these cab cases is, you know, you have the criminal background of the respondents are kind of outlined to the court as part of the Criminal Assets Bureau's case to show that all their expenditure or the proceeds that they have or whatever assets they have come from crime. And so one of the strands of their cases is always linking the people who are the respondents in the case, as they call it. And in this one, it's James Mago Gately and his partner, Charlene Lamb. And it's to show their links to criminality. Now, to be fair to Charlene, her main link to criminality is her partner, James Mago Gately. She has no criminal convictions at all. It was mentioned.
Motoring offences.
It's just three motoring offences. That's it. Like, you know, mobile phone in hand, parking at a bus stop, I think. So, you know, it's absolutely nothing in regards to that. But I mean, in terms of Mago Gately, he was described, I mean, straight off, they said he was originally, a senior figure in the Kinahan organized crime group. And then with the murder of Gary Hutch, his pal in Spain in December, I think, wasn't it December 2015?
September 2015, yeah.
2015. And he was, of course, a pallbearer at his funeral. That was a picture I know that we used. And that was used as kind of in the case this week, that, you know, that he's very much sided with the Kinahan, or sorry, he sided against the Kinahan faction with the Hutches in that, you know, horrific feud that broke out. Subsequently to all that, you had the Regency shooting shortly afterwards, like within a couple of weeks a couple of months, certainly, of Gary Hutch's murder in Spain. And, you know, and it also went through, you know, he'd been linked to a number of murders. And one of them would have been the 2010 or 2011 murder of Eamon the Don Dunn. And also they linked him to the Regency shooting in which David Byrne was shot dead. And I know that to some extent that had been out already in the media, but it was more in the kind of, it would have been phrased in a way that the Byrne gang would have blamed him for that rather than any kind of definite evidence or anything. Whereas this is now belief evidence that's been given by senior Gardaí to say that they believe he was linked to that.
And from recollection during the Regency trial, and I mean, this was a lot of it coming out during Jonathan Dowdall's evidence, which wasn't believed by the judges and wasn't taken on board by the court. But nonetheless, it kind of came into the public ether. A lot of people that were, certainly the Dowdall was saying was linked to those murders. I think Mago Gately was one of those that was named, because I remember afterwards we were able to sit down and kind of go through each one of the people that had been named or given a shout out during the Regency trial, and he was one of them. But whatever about the Byrne murder, because of course, look, that was carried out by the Hutch organised crime group. That has been certainly given in evidence in court. But the Eamon the Don Dunn murder, like of 2010, and he was shot in the Fossa House pub in Finglas, that was quite a skilled assassination, we could call it. He was, you know, out of control, Eamon the Don Dunn. He'd taken over a vast drugs organisation after the murder of his own boss, Marlo Hyland, in 2007. He had sort of really punched his way to the top of the gangland ladder and had been responsible for, there was figures given out about up to 20 murders himself, for directing murders. He became very paranoid.
Yeah,
and user of drugs.
And a number of those victims were actually people that he had carry out murders himself. So, like, you know, he was, anyone who did any dirty work for him were being targeted. So,
in case they told on him, or...
Well, presumably so, yeah. So that they could, there's no prospect that these people could ever become state witnesses against them. So, I mean, that's getting to a point where nobody really wants to work with you. Now, in that case, like, if you're getting involved in crime, like, okay, he's killing maybe killers, but at what point is he going to turn on other people further down the road if he had developed that level of paranoia? Apparently, very much like Marlo Hyland himself had become.
And he was moving around. He wasn't sleeping in the same place at night. He was living in caravan sites up on the northeast coast. And, you know, he was behaving very, very peculiarly. He had a lawyer who I think has since passed away, who was acting on his behalf, and he was suing everybody. And yeah.
Yeah, no, it was kind of strange. And it was kind of a multi-gang effort. So, I mean, while the Hutch faction, you know, individuals may have been involved, and Mago Gately being linked to it by the guards doesn't necessarily mean he was anywhere near the actual killing, because, you know, there would have been a lot of moving parts between spotting him, supplying a weapon, supplying cars, you know, helping people get away, paying off whoever needs to be paid off, all that sort of thing. So, I mean, there's so many different ways somebody could be linked to it. Of course, you know, it was pointed out by his own defense team. I mean, they put up a bit of a fight, I suppose. And they were mentioning, well, look, you know, he hasn't really been convicted of anything serious. His last conviction was in 2007. He's 34 convictions, 19 of which were for road traffic, that sort of stuff. again, you know, of course, on the Criminal Assets Bureau side, it was mentioned that he was involved in a robbery at Bayside, I think in 2008, in which a large sum of cash was taken, and that he was also arrested over a Tiger robbery in which over 700,000 euro or pound euro was taken in 2009. So, like, again, there was making the point, there, his side were making the point that, okay, he was arrested, but he wasn't certainly not convicted in any of these things.
It's funny now, because Gary Hutch would have been suspected of being involved in a Tiger kidnap and robbery around the same time.
And in fairness, that's how the CAB Council, that's how they described the Hutch gang. I mean, the initial thing was that they're an organised crime group involved in armed robbery, as well as the importation and distribution of drugs. So, I mean, armed robbery was part and parcel of, I suppose, one of their income streams, to use the proper business parlance, you know, along with drugs. But also, interesting enough, the fact that there was attempts on his life was also highlighted as the fact, well, you got to be involved in organised crime if someone's trying to kill you in this fashion. And of course, Imre Arrakis got a great mention there. You know, the Estonian hitman who was hired by, allegedly, by Daniel Kinnane to come and try and kill Gately, who at the time was living in Newry. Which also came up in an affidavit that he had put back into court in his defence, that he had no money when they were looking for the legal aid. And when he was living in Newry, he was just working. He was valeting cars and working for accommodation and food, which kind of, I think, kind of is in contrast to the expenditure.
That was April 2017 when Imre Arrakis was sent to Ireland, allegedly by Daniel Kinnahan, and he was caught due to a kind of a multi-agency investigation into him. Based in Lithuania, and they were watching his movements, had tipped off the Irish police, who managed to get an operative out to the airport and followed him. And of course, when he was arrested, he was found in possession of one of these encrypted phones. Messages on the phones were photographed before they disappeared. And that was all around the time that Daniel Kinnahan was planning his wedding out in the Burj Al Arab to Kiva Robinson, and still managed to find time out to organise an attempted hit on Gately. But just a month later, after that,
and that was,
there
a
was
point,
another go.
Yeah, and that was a point made in court. Like, they suggested that it was a demonstration of his prominent role in the Hutch organised crime gang, that within a month they were having a second go. At which he was lucky to escape. I think four bullets hit him. Like,
where he was out Kaylon in the Smith. North side, was at the garage.
He was at a Topaz garage at the time.
Out at the airport, was it?
Close to the airport there. Geez, I could drive there, but I can't tell you the address.
Oh, I know it. Yeah, it's on the way out to Coolock.
It's not too far. Like, it'd be kind of, turn left at Coolock.
Yeah.
Towards the
airport. Me in the north side, I'm not great.
But again, that was highlighted as, look, this guy is a serious member of the opposing faction, because the Kinnans made such an effort to try and kill him. It was also mentioned that he was linked, there was another shooting that he was linked to, in which another member of the Hutch family was shot. This was kind of mentioned in court yesterday. Now, this is kind of like a barrister speed reading.
Was that described as a kind of like a shooting that was part of, you know, something to do with police and a robbery, or was it described as a kind of an in-house?
It wasn't described at all. It was literally, I think it just said there, it was a counsel speed reading his way through selected bits and pieces of affidavits, which is always a bit ropey, or not ropey, but it's certainly a bit hard to report on sometimes when you're trying to, you know, take notes and making sure you're accurate. So hopefully at some point down the line, we'll get hold of the affidavits through official channels. We'll filter out more detail then and we'll probably get a more filled in picture of exactly, you know, the involvement of Mago Gately in certain incidents and his role in the various crime gangs.
Just come back briefly to the Eamon the Don Dunn murder, which occurred in 2010, at which point, that according to this belief evidence that's been put before the court, belief evidence, is that what it is?
It was part of the chief officer's belief evidence, in which he'll reference other affidavits, which are the grounding affidavits. So you'll have one where there could be two or three, but you'll certainly have one affidavit by, you know, a senior investigating officer who'll give a full account of, you know, Mago Gately's involvement in crime. You know, it'll literally be the life and times of a criminal, and it'll all be there to show their, you know, his serious involvement in the crime, and it'll go way back. You know, it might show, you know, it, but none of this was necessarily referred to. I mean, I suppose there was so much, I suppose, good stuff in terms of evidence, you know, from the cab's point of view at the time when this money was being spent on their house in Coolock, which the case is actually all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about this little house on Glynn Avenue, which was basically doubled in size, bought for 125,000 and an estimate of 440,000 spent on it. So they essentially rebuilt an entirely new house at the back of it. It was variously described as a two-story apartment.
Is he originally from Coolock or did he move out there? He's North Inner City, isn't he? I think.
As far as Inner City, he was always North Inner City. And obviously this house was bought. It was in his name and a planning application went through. I noticed it was Philip Sheedy was the architect.
What year was that they bought that house?
That would have been, I'm on the spot there. That was actually, the planning was lodged in 2013. It was bought in 2013. The extension was completed in 2015, like the building work was done. And then it was kind of, it was finished off. It was, you know, outfitted and finished off in 2016.
So this was kind of like at dates that according to this belief evidence and including the time that Dunn was shot at the Fossa house when James Mago Gately was part of the Kinahan organised crime group. So it's kind of before all the trouble.
Yeah, it's kind of overlapping really, isn't it? Mm. You know, when he was finishing off in 2016. So presumably that might have kind of put the kibosh on business as usual. We know that they all struggled to make a bit of money while they were trying to kill each other, that they couldn't do both at the same time, or certainly not as easy. The expenditure before that was I think the phrase was used was actually, it was eye-watering. And we heard that in the free legal aid application in October 22. And again, it came up this week about the 3-week cruise to the Far East. And I took note of some of the places that were mentioned, if I can find it, but it kind of, they basically flew out on Emirates out to Singapore. They joined the ship in Singapore. And then took off sort of around, I think they got to the Gulf of Thailand, they were in Vietnam, they were in Korea, and finished off in Japan. So it was a 3-week.
It
was
bad, wouldn't it?
Well, it would have, and it was one with a balcony view as well. So it wasn't the cabin class or the economy class, you know.
Very nice.
And they had a trip with the full family in tow, as it was described, to the Caribbean as well the year before. So, I mean, they were enjoying spending a few quid as well as putting this 440,000 in, and they were kind of showing that they didn't have any money, and there was admissions but it was an attempt at defense. Like Mago Gately was saying, look, there was credible threats to his life, and he hasn't been able to work since 2015 and hasn't been in receipt of any social welfare, and so was entirely dependent on his partner Charlene Lamb and family members to tide him over. So, I mean, he's kind of more or less saying he had no income, but at the same time, her income in that stage wasn't much. I think I think her best year she was earning 24,000 through the company, through I think her beautician business, and they were making, again, this was made look, I mean, they were saying, like, well, she was only to be able to move her wages to this to pay the mortgage to make it look like there is a legitimately funded mortgage. But then what was she living on in the meantime? So they were living on, you know, there was no normal living expenditures. And they do this calculation to say what, you know, your normal living expenses should be plus with what they find. And they come up with $500,000 deficit in their spending. So that, the, you know, there was no way of explaining where this came from. And, you know, the council, I mean, did their best to kind of say, look, well, it was legitimate. You know, they got a 10 grand loan to you know, to set them up, I think, in initially paying for the deposit on the house and stuff like that. And that they'd done all the work himself, or his friends had done it for free. And, you know, people had helped them out with some of the materials. And yet, at the same time, CAB were able to find emails from the architect to builders pricing the job, emails back to other members of the staff, I think, of the architect's firm, saying, look, we've sent it out to so many builders and so-and-so has priced it up. And so they had all this. So it was a professional job, you know, it was an architect, it was getting priced up by builders. So this wasn't somebody getting his mates to build his house and doing it on the cheap.
And obviously the job was done so professionally, if it was that kind of money. Isn't it interesting? And we're just seeing a little window by this affidavit, which is covering a short period of time in the life of James Mago Gately and Miss Lamb. But it shows the good and the bad. I mean, it shows all they got from, I mean, the The court has been told that he was a member of the Kinahan Organised Crime Group, which we know to be a, you know, multi-billion now drug cartel, shipping drugs into the country, weapons, etc. You know, you got all those fancy holidays. You got to buy your house. You got to build something three times the value of the actual property, probably when your neighbours couldn't hardly afford to change the windows. The few businesses, you had those fancy cruise holidays, and then it goes dark. And all of a sudden, he is, you know, he's shot. He's shot sitting in a car at the Topaz petrol station on the Clonchock Road in North Dublin. You know, we know that an off-duty nurse at the scene tried to treat him and actually, I think, saved his life before he got into hospital. He can't work. He's up in Newry, and there's an international hitman in the country with his address and with a plan to kill him. You know, all the wealth and the riches kind of goes to shit, doesn't it? When in the blink of an eye.
Well, I suppose in Michael Corleone terms, you know, the mattresses were to the walls, like, at this stage. So, I mean, it wasn't business as usual. I mean, maybe, you know, we saw that with the case recently of John Coon, like, who basically there was nothing left for a cab to find because they just blew it all and just spend. So, you know, I guess there's some guys are going to be better at, I suppose, figuring out what you really want. What's the point in saving it if cab are going to come and take it? So we might as well spend it.
Good times, and then there's bad times, really bad times. I mean, they're not normal bad times. You're getting shot at. You're you know, your family are at risk. You have to put bullet resistant windows in your house. You have to live offside. You have to, you know, be careful wherever you drive. I mean, there was a tracker on his car that time that he was shot by Caelan Smith, who was on the payroll of the Kinahans and got 20-year sentence for the hit attempt.
Yeah. And even in Newry, like where he was going to be shot, they had details of the underground car park where he parked. He'd been under surveillance as well. Mm. So, I mean, they kind of... Yeah, I mean, look.
And of course,
I guess if you choose
out,
that life,
he was a pallbearer for one of his best friends, who was, you know, shot dead. Gary Hutch, he carried him. He carried his coffin through Dublin. It just is sort of, it's an eye opener, really, of what it's all about. It's not all about the good times. It's the bad times, really. I think far outweigh, surely, the 3 week.
Yeah, I would entirely agree with you. But I mean, I guess it's some people, it's the price you pay. It's the cost of doing business. And even, you know, it's part of the fun to some extent. And that's very much in inverted commas. But like, I'm sure some of these guys get an adrenaline rush, like, you know, out of, you know, wearing a bulletproof vest or having to keep a gun hidden nearby, or, you know, and it adds to the drama of their lives, which I guess is fine in your 20s, early 30s. But like, when you start having kids, you know, you're kind of wondering, if you're thinking in a normal frame of mind, maybe now it's time to slow down. You know, and I suppose what CAB is doing is stopping people like James Mago Gately or John Coon from becoming legitimate.
Yeah.
That you can't say that one day you stop all this, you know, having been involved in lethal gangland feuding, you can't suddenly one day turn around and become, you know, own your own pet shop or selling sweets or whatever it is.
Mm.
You can't just, you know, step out and enjoy the fruits of your murderous career.
And do you think
career.
That's what people are still trying to do? Do you think that's the ultimate aim for people who, when they initially go into it and they kind of go, I'll just do a little bit of this, I'll make enough money to buy my house, then I'll make enough money just to do it up, and then I'll make enough money to go on a cruise, and then I'll...
Yeah, but I mean, you could see it at the very top end. I mean, you could see it with Christy Kinnan Sr. want to be an aviation consultant, sort of advising people on, you know, how to live their lives, presumably be a vegan as well as owning an airline servicing, I don't know, hospitals in Africa or whatever it was, you know. So, I mean, yeah, and be able to walk around in a big city like, you know, Dubai or Hong Kong or whatever, and pretend to be the international businessman, which in one sense he is, but like, you know, it's not a normal business. And, you know, look, I mean, they're sanctioned now. The Americans are after him for, you know, lots of various reasons, as far as we understand, everything from, you know, money laundering for Hezbollah to, you know, carting, you know, cocaine around the world. So, I mean... You know, I guess, you know, Michael Gately is further down the line, and whether people like this, you know, want to have a different life, I'm not entirely sure. You see some guys do, but they do it at the other end. They almost kind of shave their heads and wear sackcloth and ashes and come out of prison saying, I'm never going to, you know, to do that again. And they don't get involved in the flash side of it. Because, you know, I mean, all that empty bling to some extent is just that. And, you know, some people get fed up of it. Some people get fed up of it. Some people never do.
Yeah, this is certainly, I think it's probably addictive, you know, the spend and that, you know, constant money and being able to do that is almost therapeutic to get rid of it. The Gately, why is he fighting this case? Surely he shouldn't be wanting this kind of information on the public record about him, or does he care?
It's hard to know if he cares. I mean, he never physically turned up at the case, nor did Charlene Lamb, but they were represented throughout it. And they got limited free legal aid for a forensic accountant and a forensic quantity surveyor to kind of challenge, you know, what the cab were doing. And that actually held up the case. It went on and on for quite some time. They had difficulty getting someone to do it. And then the judge wasn't happy with the price that these forensic specialists were going to cost. And he capped it at a certain point on the basis that, well, I could read the file in 8 hours. So they're getting 8 hours at whatever euro an hour. And then in the case of the quantity surveyor, he came back with almost the exact same figure as the cab's quantity surveyor on how much was spent in the house. So all the you know, the wriggling in the ends and wrangling didn't amount to much. In fact, if anything, it strengthened the cab's case that they came up with, you know, a separate quantity surveyor who came up with the same figure. I think there was $2,000 in the difference.
Isn't it interesting that we rarely see sort of Hutch associated cases coming before the courts, the Criminal Assets Bureau? Maybe there's just more of them, but there seems to be plenty of bling floating around the Kinahans. But the Hutches, I mean, even members that maybe we can identify and we don't need to name, but they don't have much or look as if they have much.
Well, I suppose, like Jerry Hutch, the monk himself was hit
by him.
Yeah, no, but that was a long time ago in the early days. And obviously lessons were quite possibly learned. I mean, like Jerry Hutch, we know, has properties in outside of this jurisdiction and in Spain.
It's largely in Lanzarote, and I do imagine in luxury and all the rest of it. But I mean, sort of casting him aside, looking at some of the other prominent members.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, but I mean, it is possible that, you know, some people have, you know, taken the point and keep their assets outside of this country.
And what's the point if you can't enjoy them?
Well, if you enjoyed them in the sun in Spain,
yeah,
you can. I mean, it is. I mean, to some extent, like we do know that there was a couple of cases recently. You know, there was apartments that they knew of that people were trying to buy in places like Bulgaria, and they're saying, "Look, well, we can't get any information about it." Place in Turkey, it's much the same. So, you know, but you're living in Turkey, you're enjoying your assets there. You know,
yeah.
And even in cases where there's been property in Spain, you can't necessarily force anyone to sell it. You can use it in evidence, say, look, we know that he or she owns this property in Spain and they couldn't possibly have afforded it, you know, through legitimate means. They can't necessarily enroll the Spanish authorities to force them to sell it. Now, I think there is legislation at some point being touted like that, you know, to kind of wrap up this loophole that, certainly within the EU at some point we might see where, you know, corresponding organizations being able to work with each other to seize assets of criminal figures. I mean, look, we do know, I mean, there was another separate case involving the UK police that was mentioned, and they were very helpful in helping CAB to seize assets of people here in Ireland. Mm-hmm. Actually, there was two cases. One of them was involved in that firm, Nida Investments, were involved in a huge amount of invoice redirect schemes. And that was entirely kind of information supplied by the UK police. And there was another one where it was kind of a funny one to some extent, unless you're involved yourself, but it was a guy who was described by South Wales police as being involved in crime. And he actually gave evidence against his ex-wife to say, yes, it was all the proceeds of crime because he didn't want her to get the money.
Really?
So he'd rather cab
that one before.
He'd rather cab get it. Well, you will on Sunday.
Hopefully. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll talk about that one next week.
So there is that kind of cooperation that goes on. But like, I mean, some of them obviously are cute enough. Some of them, again, you know, I mean, it was something I think Joey had spoken to you about how some of the guys just live hand to mouth. They're making huge sums of money, and some of them are addicted to drugs, some into gambling, some go drinking, some it's prostitutes or whatever, you know, and they have nothing left. They haven't got a bean. They'll go into prison if they get caught, and they'll come out and start again, like, you know, with with whatever, with their dull money, their 2 weeks dull money in their pocket.
You wonder, is it because it's not an honest wage that, you know, it's so easily earned that you can just, you just feel like lashing it and you don't have that same sense of value for anything?
I'd say, yeah. And don't forget, like, I mean, you see it, it's a really clear pattern, I think, with fraudsters. You have people who are turning tricks day to day and they know they're going to get caught and they don't care. And it just pushes it to the back of their mind. They just, it's from one to the next. Then you have others who it's a lifestyle thing. It's a game. Mm. And again, you know, if they ever sat down and thought about it, they were going to get caught at some point, but they get the Porsche and the big house. And then the next step up is the professional fraudsters who, you know, by and large are go undetected. You know, there's very few cases, people who get themselves into proper, you know, business positions and just rip off the shareholders, their partners or whoever else, steal everything. And they are fraudsters and they're just far more calculating. And it's the same, I think, with someone involved in selling drugs. You've got people at the bottom who are living from week to week or day to day even. And then you have, you know, people who enjoy playing the game. And I mean, like, even though the Kinahans are the biggest, they probably fall into that second category. Like, you know, even if they never spend a day in jail, they haven't got away with it. Like, the world knows that they're criminals.
Yeah, yeah. Gately, and I think others that are attracted to the life as well, you know, I wonder why he's doesn't just sort of roll over and move on and whatever. But they do tend to be anti-establishment, anti-state, and kind of high-risk individuals who don't behave. You know, it's not like accountants, etc., who are sort of attracted to the world of high-level organized crime. I think Gately did live in Spain for a period of time, or certainly was over and back during the height of the Kinahan's power there. So, you know, and he is described in this affidavit as pretty senior member of it, and links to some of the higher sort of end crime that they would have been involved in. So it could be just a personality as well that he has that's drawn to it, that, you know, you just fight the cab. You're not going to roll over and give them anything. You're just going to fight back.
Yeah, you see that with a lot of the cases. Some just ignore them completely, don't go near it. Others, like, go through the rigmarole of instructing lawyers and do their best to more or less delay things. So they figure, you know, if we get another couple of days out of it, or a couple of years or weeks, you know, great. Like, we've had the fun of the asset involved, whether it's, you know, whatever it is. I mean, it's especially when it's a family home. The courts have to, they have this phrase, like, you know, that justice has to be served, and, you know, the interests of justice, you know, have to be carefully watched out for. And throwing a innocent members of a family because somebody's involved in crime out of their home is something that Irish courts don't do lightly. Mm. So they have to kind of really go through it. I mean, there was one brief mention of a completely separate case, a much smaller case. And it came back up saying, like, they were looking for what, you know, I think a section 4, a receiver to be appointed, and saying that, you know, this house that was declared the proceeds of crime in 2016 is still being lived in by the person involved, you know, so they kind of wanted to get a move on, like, you
know.
That's
free rent, essentially, for 6 years.
Well, presumably so. Or
in Dublin?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, this one is actually down it's in the west of Ireland.
Okay.
So it's a separate one again.
Still going,
like,
to be,
you know,
expensive,
but it's just an example of it. Like, you know, well, like, you know, you could have walked away and handed the keys over to the cab.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you've got 8 years more out of your assets, you know. And yeah. I'm sure there's various successful ploys. I mean, you see a lot of people, you know, coming in. And,
you have to have a certain personality for that, though.
No, you would do it. Yeah, it is. You want to have, you want to have that kind of oppositional kind of personality, for lack of a different thing, where you give nothing to the state. I mean, and don't forget, like, you know, some of it's rooted in you know, a core reason. Like, you know, when you think about, like, how many people in prison, the surveys done of, you know, they were kind of abused in institutions, like, you know. So I mean, to them, you know, the guards and the courts and social workers, or, you know, the cruelty men, as they used to call them in Dublin, from the children's charities, whatever. I mean, as far as they were concerned, you know, all these people, you know, collaborated together to make these, you know, to make your life a misery. And not saying everybody who was through that system ended up in crime, but some people who have, you know, have used that to justify why they hate guards, or why they hate the judges.
And they won't cooperate with that.
And then their own families then, you know, continue on that tradition. So, I mean, it hasn't come out of thin air to some extent.
Well, listen, I'm looking forward to hearing about the dodgy divorce and the guy giving the money to Cab. I love that sort of stuff. I think that is the stuff of movies. So we'll talk about that next week.
Will do. No problem, Nicola.
Thanks, Eamon.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com.
Produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. Research assistant is Clodagh Meaney. If you like this show and love true crime, leave us a review. Or why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.
Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.